4. First Morning at Sea. It was very early the next morning. Justice was curled up on the boarded floor of the dark, confined hold in that happy, hazy half-world between sleep and wakefulness. He was dimly aware that his back ached, and his legs were stiff. He felt so sore lying there on the hard wooden deck. The blanket that covered him was rough and coarse. His head was pressed against the hard calico bundle that served as his pillow. It smelt so strange, and it prickled his face. He was dimly conscious of the rise and fall of the ship, with its gentle lurch against the waves. He could just make out the subdued murmurs about him, the contented grunts and snorings, mothers consoling their whimpering babies, a snapping dog, the unfamiliar rattles of a sea-going vessel, the whistlings, murmurings, and groanings of sleeping men who were having their elbows knocked and their legs trod upon. The hazy noises mingled together. He gave up the struggle to sort them all out. Does prudence feel like this? He wondered. He lifted his head. Tallow smoke filled the air. Shadows danced and flickered in the eerie yellow half-light cast by the spluttering candle wicks. He saw his father, already awake, sitting up, with his hatless head bowed over the great fat leather book in his hand. The pages were yellow, cracked, and stained by a thousand thumb marks. He was holding a candle close to the page. He was reading intently. His eyes were fixed upon the words before him. He pored over the book. Just beyond his father, Justice could make out Prudence as she lay close to her mother, both of them still gently sleeping. He saw their bodies rising and gently falling back as they breathed, blissfully unaware of their bitter surroundings. Justice rubbed his eyes. "You're awake then, my boy," said Mr. Lovelace, his voice breaking into his son's thoughts. "Feel a bit stiff, eh?" A smile crept to his lips at the sight of his son rubbing his legs and arms. Justice stirred himself and yawned. He stretched himself, but immediately wished he hadn't. His hand had clouted against a very hard and unforgiving oak buttress, and his head had slipped off the pillow to the wooden floor. He had thought the pillow hard enough, but now he knew better. Now he remembered. He wasn't in his bed at home. He was at sea. He was on the Speedwell, bound for America. He lay still and began to drop back into the mixed world of dream and daydream. He could just pick out the low beams above him. "How much has happened over the past few months," he thought. "We've not had a settled home, and, more important to me, a settled bed for weeks. All those weary walks in Holland. My legs ache even now at the thought. The voyage across the sea to England and all the upheavals we had there, and now this hard, cramped hold which has to be our home for the coming months as we sail over this wild and unknown ocean. Home. Why? Why?" He could hear the unaccustomed noises that would prove to be his companions over many weeks, a strange hissing, sucking of water as it squealed through the bilges, the gentle singing of the sea and the sighing of the ship in reply. "What time is it, Father?" he asked sleepily. "Just past 5, came the whispered reply. Justice drifted back into his dreams. "Will it be a fine day?" he mused. "Will there be any storms today? I wonder. How fast are we going? What will we do today? What will we have for food?" As if his father had heard his thoughts, his deep voice broke in upon his son's daydreams. "Your mother's waking up. We shall soon break our fast." Within a few minutes, the four of them were all awake and sitting up. They hunched themselves together, drew close with their backs pressed against the pitiless boards. Before them they had laid their simple breakfast. Simple was the word. It had not taken much preparation. The children felt that there was nothing very exciting about it. A clean white napkin had been placed on the floor. Their food was laid in three small heaps upon the sheet. It consisted of a pile of dry biscuits, some pieces of salt beef, and a few green apples. Leastways, that's how it appeared to the children. Things were very difficult to sort out in the murky darkness. Before they began to eat, Mr. Lovelace gave thanks to God for the provision of the food. Then they started to eat the dry biscuits. Justice reached out and picked up one. He broke it into small pieces. It snapped in his hands, and he felt how hard it was. Well, that was not the worst. Oh, how terrible they tasted. He thought they felt so hard in his hands, but they were far worse in his mouth, and so dry. It took an age to chew and swallow. He couldn't get them down. "And this is all we shall have," he thought, "all the time we are aboard." But he wouldn't voice his thoughts. He could not, he dare not. Had they not just thanked God for his provision? Had his father not often told him they had to undergo such hardships if they were ever to reach the land of freedom? And he knew that his father was right. It was far better to serve God, even if that meant a life of hardship for them now. He knew that, whatever the cost, they must live for God, and not live in ease and serve themselves. The salt beef, in its turn, lived up to its name, too. It was salty, very. Both the children pulled grimaces as they ate. They screwed their faces at the hard, bitter food. The apples proved little better. They, too, were hard and very sour. "Cheer up, my dears," consoled their mother. She had noticed their looks of anguish at the bitter food. "We shall get used to it. And it's only for a while." After breakfast, Mr. Lovelace opened his big leather Bible. The Lovelace family, like all the Pilgrims, always began each day with Bible reading and prayer. They would not change their habits just because they were at sea. He read some verses to the family, very slowly. Then he bowed his hatless head and prayed for God's blessing upon the family in the day before them. His mother and children bowed their heads with Mr. Lovelace. He prayed for protection on the voyage. He prayed that God would use them in their lives for his glory. He made mention of each of the family in particular. He spoke of the special dangers and temptations that might befall them. He closed in thanks to God for his mercy and goodness to them. At the end of family prayers, there was a short time of silence. Then Mr. Lovelace slapped his thigh and put his long arms about them all. "Let's all take a walk on deck, shall we?" They were so cramped in their quarters below, and the air was so stifling, that they needed all the fresh air they could get. Mrs. Lovelace quickly folded the napkin and carefully placed it back amongst her possessions. They all tidied their rough bedding. They pulled themselves to their feet. Mr. Lovelace rose and tried to stand upright, but before he could straighten his back, his head hit the beams of the low ceiling of the deck above. He put his hand quickly to his brow. The children heard him suck in air with the pain. "Are you all right, my love?" came the anxious cry of his wife. "Yes, my dear, thank you. 'Twill keep me humble, this low roof," he said with a wry smile upon his face. "I shall not be able to hold my head erect down here, that's for sure." "Come, my my dears. He turned to the children. Come, let's go up. Let's get some real air. And let me stand up straight. They picked their way carefully to the foot of the stairs, and soon they were standing upon the deck in the dim dawn light. What surprised Justice was that he could see nothing but sea. There was no land in sight at all. Then he began to make out a dim, grey smudge on the horizon, as his eyes grew accustomed to the feeble light. "That's England," said his father, anticipating the unasked question. "England?" cried Prudence. "Yes, my dears. We're so far out that that is all you can see of that great land of ours." They were heading into the west, the morning sun rising behind them. Far out in the west they could see dark black clouds on the horizon. Above them they heard the wind beating furiously into the sails. The canvas snapped in reply. They felt the ship rising and falling on the waves. They saw the white horses riding the ocean around them. Justice felt the wind tugging at his hair. He sensed his father's strong arm upon his shoulder. "We'll have a storm come up today, my son. We shall not have to wait long to get our sea legs. The ocean will introduce us very quickly to its power. Look out there," he went on, raising his arm to the west. "We're heading for a storm, all right." The wind was already rising, and the first drops of spume began to beat upon the ship. The spray hit them in the face. They bent their heads. Justice felt the sting of the salt in his eyes, and, as he licked his lips, he tasted its tang. He lifted his face and looked out to the west once again. His eyes gave away his inward fear. The sky merged into the distant sea. The yellow sun from behind played upon the greyness of cloud and water before them. He heard the ship groan and creak with the force of the wind above her and the power of the sea beneath. The Lovelaces stood on deck facing into the wind. They stood there for a long time. No one said a word. Father and mother stood with the children between them. The wind continued to scream about them. It increased its force and power. The wind blew droplets of spray into their faces. The speedwell began to climb higher in the waves, and then she fell down, down, down into the depths of the sea. Justice felt his stomach moving in sympathy, rather out of sympathy, with her. He felt queasy. He wished he'd not eaten his breakfast. Suddenly the bows hit into the waves, and a great surge of white-topped water came across the prow and onto the deck, swilling against them and drenching them in the legs. The sea was slapping against the side of the vessel, laughingly calling her to play. The wind joined in the chorus. It whipped the yards, began to yell in the rigging and smack against the sails. It screamed for attention. "I think it's time we went below," said Mr. Lovelace to the family. He had to cup his hands to his mouth and shout because of the screech of the wind in the rigging. Just as he spoke, another great surge of water crossed onto the ship and pounded the boards. The speedwell lurched. She staggered. She seemed to drop into nothingness. Then she was on her wallowing way once again. The beams creaked and groaned even more. The sails smacked and snarled angrily in the wind. The waves began to beat upon the deck, and the wind and the spray whipped into their faces. The elements no longer called for the ship to play. As though the speedwell had declined the offer, and thus offended the sea and wind, they now combined to try to destroy her. The Lovelaces made their way as best they could across the swilling deck towards the hatch that led below. As they began to scramble down the stairway, another great wall of grey-green water came across the deck. It drenched them this time completely and to the skin. The water chased them down the stairs, hitting, smacking, pulling and pushing, carrying all before it. In between decks, chaos reigned. Salt water was everywhere. It slopped from side to side, chasing across the hold. "Batten down the hatches," came the raucous cry. "Quick, quick, man, batten down the hatches." The hatches were pulled over, slammed shut, and lashed tight with ropes. At once all was darkness below the hatches. In the dim light cast by the tallows, Justice and Prudence looked on the reigning confusion. Pots and pans and bundles had been scattered anyhow by the force of the water. Precious belongings had been flung in every direction. Chaos was king. The hold was full of drenched and tumbling humanity. Arms and legs stuck out everywhere at the oddest angles. Everything was wet through. Saturated blankets and pillows were strewn about all over the place. There was a babel of noise. All was topsy-turvy. Children everywhere were crying. One young girl had a horrible gash across her forehead, and a swelling red bruise where she'd been hurled against a beam. Men and women were furiously scrabbling in corners, desperately pulling and tugging in vain attempts to recover their few possessions. Everyone was shouting. The ship continued to lurch from one side to the other, rolling and pitching in the force of the wind and waves. The hold seemed to be one thick porridge of people and property swilling about in seawater. The world had taken leave of its senses. It had gone mad.